of knowing. Crow!
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is episode 574. Jason Lindgren is with me, and Ian Iverson joins us for the first time. Ian is the author of a very useful book. I have it here with me. It's called The World Astronomic Planner for 2024. I am holding the Northern Hemisphere edition. And you'll find out as we go along, it just takes every single day of the year and it gives you information across calendars. Like if I just quickly open it up to any given page, I just randomly grabbed the 6 month, 12th day of 2024. It's a waxing moon. The energy is fire fruit. Looks like it's in the sign of Leo. The sun is in Taurus. At the Anno Luci, the day would be the 355th of 6024. The Chinese calendar would call it 5205. The Coptic, 1740. The Ethiopian, 2016. This would also be a leap year for them. The Greek Attic calendar would mark it as 700.3. The Hebrew calendar would mark it as 5784. It goes on and on through the Islamic calendar, the Hindu, even up to the Mayan calendar. And the Mayan calendar this day would be 5137. It's just so useful. It gives you so much cross-cultural information. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a lovely good morning.
Welcome, Ian. Why don't we get right out the gate? Why don't you lay down where people can find you on a website or an email if you choose, and let folks know the title again and where they can get it?
Yeah, thanks, Crow. So my website is anmaherbs.com, and that's anmaherbs.com. And you can also find my planner on Amazon, and I'll have a link on my website as well. So it's all focused on my website where you can find all my stuff. Yeah. Did you have any specific questions you wanted to ask first?
Yeah, we're going to go into the list, but let me start by saying this is going to be a heck of a year. I don't think anyone doesn't realize that this is going to be a heck of a year, and that eclipse in early April on the 8th is a milestone. It is a big milestone. It's possible a comet will be involved, maybe even visible during totality of the eclipse. There are a number of planets. This is just a big deal for so many reasons. And if you talk to the Western astrologers, you're going to hear that. If you talk to the Vedic astrologers, you're going to hear that. If you talk to the sidereal astrologers, you're going to hear that. And here's the thing. And what's about to happen, I imagine one of the big things that's coming is chaos will appear to be on a rise. And while this is true, it's not all negative, but basically the old systems are coming apart now, and they have to. But when we're faced with all this false information, misinformation, mass media that lies for a living, how is it that we determine truth? I cover that so often here. When I am stuck, I go straight to nature, to the natural world where there is no lie. And while most people accept that this is correct, I don't think a lot of people realize that nature is everything we can see. When we go out under the night sky and we look up at the stars and luminaries, are we still looking at nature? In fact, we are. And those energies have a massive effect. That is the clock for this world. Those are the cyclical markers that have shown time and time again. Great conjunction in the end of the 90s with Jupiter and Saturn. What did we get? We got 9/11. Great conjunction into the 2000s. What did we get 20 years later? We got COVID. These things are true, and we are now just waking up to it. And I want to make that point because this work and others like it and any form of astrology that you start to get interested in are going to be steering us towards a direction that we will all be gravitating to, or many of us will. All right, so we're going to start at the top here. Stellar lunar and solar observation versus the Western tropical astrology program. Let's contrast that.
Yeah, well, just to bunny hop on what you were saying before while getting into that, the conjunctions in general are a very good thing to focus on. So like conjunctions and oppositions and trines and sextiles and squares, that's really good to focus on, because whether a person is going with the stars in sidereal or the tropical, which is more of a seasonal thing, there's going to be the same conjunctions. And so if people are wondering about what type of system, I would first focus on conjunctions, like you were talking about.
I think we should make a point here, Ian. For a long time, I tried to figure out how to speak without losing major portions of the audience, which is why I started saying sky clock. If I said other things, then all the astronomer, science-based people would bail. If I said the other way, all the astrology people would bail. So I neutralized my language. And I think it's key that we do not infringe on each other. If someone's into tropical or someone's into Vedic or someone's into sidereal, do not put them down. Your heart will lead you when you get into these kinds of things. And over time, if you're true to that path, you may be pulled in directions you never had any idea that you would go in. It's all of us trying to work out basically information that was hidden from us or lied about or basically never taught to us. So I think it's crucial that we recognize that even though someone has a different system, they're still trying to do the exact same things you are. They're trying to figure out what is correct. I mean, would you add anything to that, Ian?
Yeah. So the book that I have, The Planner, it actually combines the tropical and sidereal systems into one. That's why I usually focus on the word astronomic, because it's looking at what simply is happening, and what's happening in the stars is going to affect what's happening on Earth, but also what's happening on Earth is going to affect us immediately as well. So that's all integrated with the idea of stellar astrology and earthly astrology. And so I agree with you. I don't really push one over the other with the types of astrology. I focus more on like the scientific portion. The astrological portion goes into a lot of different types of calculations. So I don't really push that as much, but it is good to bring up sometimes.
I agree. And actually what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump in here in a second asking you what is a calendar. But I want to point something out here. If you were to get access to, or maybe you could find it online, say a Bible that was printed right before they claimed this country was set up, so the 1770s or thereabouts, or maybe a little earlier, in the really expanded editions, you will find out very quickly what was done to our calendar. You will find out that they were running on a 13-month year. There was an intercalary month. You will find out that the first day of the week was actually Sunday, and that the holy day, or the Sabbath, was Saturday. You will further find out back then that the first of the year was appropriately placed at or near the vernal equinox in March. Now, so much has changed, and it should not be a mystery to anybody why. This is about systems of control. This is about separating human beings from the natural, provably true cycles of time and the energetic influences that come with it. And what we're going to get into is basically those energetic influences. That's what the luminaries are. Whether you choose to accept that they're actively applying energy on us, or whether they're simply markers that show where the energies are, it really doesn't matter to me as long as you recognize what's going on. So let's jump in there, Ian. What exactly is a calendar?
Okay, yeah, let's get into that. So the act of timekeeping is usually what people focus on with the calendar. That's what we know of today. So if you look at where the sun is in the sky, that's the easiest thing to track, to keep in accordance with how much light is in a day and how much light is in a day throughout the year. It fluctuates. And so a lot of people would actually start their year based off of different things that they focus on in the sky or in nature. The moon is another one. The moon has a certain cycle, and that fluctuates. And then also for gardening, that has a certain cycle. And agriculture has a whole year. And so what we look at usually throughout history is three different types of calendars that are like the foundation. There's a solar calendar, a lunar calendar, and also an agriculture calendar. And so what you're mentioning with the start of the new year at the spring equinox, that's very close to the agriculture calendar. And it also is on the momentum of the solar calendar as well, because the spring equinox is one of those 8 points that is on the wheel of the year. If you type in online on DuckDuckGo or Brave or whatever search engine you use, if you type in wheel of the year, it's going to have 4 or 8 points. And that's basically the cycle that the sun takes. And you can actually calculate that based off of where it's rising. Once the sun rises exactly due east, that's exactly when the spring equinox happens. And so that's what we're really focusing on with the new year and the spring equinox, is the exact point due east. When the sun rises exactly due east, that's the spring equinox. When the sun is rising left of that or right of due east, left or right, that's going to be the winter solstice or the other solstice, the
autumnal.
Yeah, autumnal equinox.
Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, I just messed you up. You were going for the solstice, weren't you? I apologize. You were looking for the summer solstice and the winter solstice. So I messed you up. When it's due east, you're doing the spring equinox. When it travels, it would be north. That would be the winter equinox, right? And south would be the summer equinox.
So it should be the right of east for the winter, and then the left during summer. And then if you're looking at the setting sun, it's the opposite. And, you know, that's just because the sun makes like an X momentum throughout the year. So it'll rise and cross one way, and then the other portion of the year, it's going to rise on the other side and cross the other way. And so that's kind of interesting.
There's a good illustration of that in the Vatican. If you've ever seen the picture, like if you were standing on the Vatican, looking down at the obelisk, down that pathway that goes beyond the obelisk, what you're looking at is due east, and that would mark the equinox. Now, if you go left of that, you're traveling, you'll notice there's like a V, it angles out. Well, it marks actually where the solstices are on either side of that dead center point, which is the equinox. It's an easy way to visualize it.
Yeah, that's actually a good reference. I think that most people associate that with Chi Rho or Chi Rho. It's usually pronounced Chi Rho, C-H-I-R, I think R-H-O. And that is like a circle with an X, and it kind of looks like a key in a way. And that was a symbol for the seasons. And it basically is like a wheel of the year that is used in the Vatican and Christianity. So that's a really interesting thing that you brought up with the Vatican. They like imprinted that in their structure.
Proving that they have an interest in the sky clock.
Yeah. And that the structure of the Vatican is built on even more ancient temples that were there before the Vatican was built. So wherever temples are built, there's usually a temple below that that was built, because they always build on these specific ley lines. They align it with certain star constellations as well. So that's a way of imprinting heaven on earth. And the Egyptians did that a lot. There was a big dispute where the Egyptians had a bunch of these temples shut down. And then there's someone that came in that wanted to open up those temples. And what they would say is they're bringing heaven back on earth. So that's a whole another conversation, but that's kind of interesting.
So let's keep moving. I want to talk about the difference between the solar and lunar calendars. And it is my personal point of view that a sane society would have both at the same time. And I think the Bible does a good job of talking about what one luminary is for, what the other luminary is for. But never forget that in the biblical descriptions, it says it's for signs and seasons. Well, those signs, in my point of view, are the zodiac behind those two luminaries. And that's how you mark where they are. It's one of the ways you can mark where they are within the sky clock. But what is the difference between the solar and the lunar calendars?
Okay, yeah. So the solar calendar is something that is very obvious. It's very set. When it's the winter solstice, it's the shortest time of daylight. And then when it's the summer solstice, it's the longest time of daylight. And so that gives you kind of like a barometer of how their calendar was set up back then, the ancients. They focused on the sun for agriculture. The lunar calendar it kind of jumps around a little bit, where different civilizations will start a new lunar year at different times of the year based off of what they're doing in their environment. Because everybody around the world doesn't have the same exact start of every season based off of when their last frost is. So like when someone wants to start farming or gardening, they'll usually wait till their last frost is over so they can plant seeds and the new sprouts don't freeze, because a frost would freeze all the plants when they're little sprouts and then all the crops would die. So they would wait till the last frost and then they would start planting all their seeds, and that would be like the start of their agricultural year. And so what you start to see is the lunar moon is usually synced up with the agricultural year, but not always. So in the planner, I showed the agricultural year for the Hebrew tradition. What we now call Jewish was a Canaanite and ancient Israelite tradition. So I have that in there. Also, the Mayans, they have a whole festival for starting the new year of agriculture. And then they have a festival for ending the year of agriculture, which is called the Day of the Dead. And so I actually have that astronomically precise in this calendar, their Day of the Dead, which is actually different than Halloween. It's a completely different association with when that is. And it's based off of the stars and alignments with the stars and the sun. So that's in there. And that's basically describing how they grew corn. And that is mainly solar, but they tried to sync up the lunar as well. And that's where you kind of get the agriculture in the middle. So the solar is set. It's usually at the winter solstice, at the shortest day of the year. And then the lunar is usually somewhere near that. In China, there was actually wars over when the Lunar New Year started. Some actually wanted it before the winter solstice. Some wanted it after the winter solstice. And then some people wanted it right around the spring equinox. And eventually, the people in China who won out had it a little bit after the winter solstice, two moons after the winter solstice. And that's usually when the last frost ends. And so they try to sync it up with the agricultural calendar.
Their new year is lunar. They mark their new year by the moon.
Yeah, that's what we usually focus on in the West, is that the Chinese having the Lunar New Year. And there's a big contrast because we don't really use that in the West as much. We don't really use the moon. And so we see that China primarily has the Lunar New Year, but they also celebrate the winter solstice as the Solar New Year. And so I have that in the planner as well, the Chinese tradition of the Solar New Year at the winter solstice. And what the Chinese do is they separate the whole year into 24 sections. And so these 24 sections are seasons for the Chinese. And it's not just the four seasons. They make it even more refined, more detailed, that there's 24 seasons. And that's based off of agriculture. And it's based off of the warming and cooling of the earth, which is called the meteorological seasons. And in the planner, if you look up at the top right corner, it's going to show what meteorological season we're in. And that's based off of the four seasons. But in the Chinese calendar, they have it 24 instead of four seasons. And I actually will mention this now. I do have a new planner that I just put out, and it's a spring equinox New Year's planner. And so I don't know if I've told you about this, Crow. Did I mention it before?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so that one actually goes more in detail with a chart of the 24 seasonal changes. And that's based off of the sun. Primarily.
From the Chinese agricultural view.
Right.
Okay. Yep.
And so it's really good to look at all these different angles, because different civilizations have different terrains that they're working with, different seasonal changes.
Right.
Like if you're in California, it's pretty much one or two seasons the whole year around. So you don't really get too much flexibility with that. If you go to New York, it's going to be a drastic change from one season to the next. And people will notice like certain months or certain even like weeks where you'll just get this like bloom of a certain season and you'll be like, wow, this is vastly different than what the season was before.
So let me try to illustrate exactly what you said in a way where people can think about it in realistic terms, proven true by nature. In my view, we should have both calendars. There are a number of places where they keep both, and then there are places where they try to put them together. And I think it's called a lunisolar. I think the Chinese may have a version of that. I'm pretty sure the Hebrew tradition has a version of that. And by the way, the Vatican had to create one. You know why? Because of they wanted to place their biggest, one of their biggest days, which was Easter. And you can't do that with a solar calendar. The reason is it's going to be, and I get it wrong, but I'll be in the ballpark. It's the first full moon after the spring equinox pulled to the nearest day of the sun or Sunday. So you have to have a lunisolar calendar. But let's back up a minute here. While we are setting our new year by a solar calendar, think about what I'm about to say. That in almost every tradition, not all, but most, the sun is masculine energy, the moon is feminine energy. The sun is positive in polarity, the moon is negative in polarity, and that is not negative as in bad. It is the same as men are positive in polarity, women are negative in polarity. So it's like a battery. One side is not bad. Both are required. When you take a lunar calendar to set your new year, check this out. In the descriptions from the old alchemy text, they will state that the Asian bloodline, some of them, are the most feminine, which is why they have less body hair, which is why they work so well in teams and together. There's all these things. And yet we find that reflected in their calendar. They set theirs to the moon, which is typically considered feminine. Now, to come back around to where Ian was talking about a agricultural calendar, again, nature proves it true. When you set a calendar for agriculture, what are you setting it to? Well, this thing just sprouted. That's true. It just happened. And so you're actually syncing the way you're counting time with the reality. I have seen cultures in China where they have rice fields and that the leader or the chief of that particular group leaves his window open so that swallows can build nests in their house. And the swallows come and go indicating which day they should plant the rice. Now, that's another version of a calendar that's not necessarily written. But I think it's important, Ian, to try to convey that the calendars we have are detached from everything. And as you are saying, California is different from here, yet we're all still using the same calendar. So the precise mechanisms have been homogenized right out of it.
Yeah, they're taking out basically the agricultural part and they're taking out the integration part, integration with nature.
Right.
So what we have is basically an artifact. We have mostly mathematics. It can be useful. So for instance, the sun has a certain cycle and we can use math to understand that cycle, but it doesn't show the fluctuation of heat and cold on the earth based off of cloud cover or different other things that are happening. It doesn't show any of the other phenomenon that's happening in nature, but it gives us a little bit of a guideline. But we've kind of taken it too far in society, and we've seen mathematics as basically as God instead of seeing mathematics as a useful tool.
Well said.
So we have to kind of convert that where mathematics is useful, but it's the secondary resource. The primary resource is nature, and that's what we base mathematics on. So what we want to do is we want to look at the cycles and the seasons and not just the numbers. Because if we get caught up with numbers, then we think everything's going to fit in a certain box or everything's going to fit a certain way when the seasons change in different ways each year. Like for instance, the moon calendar is based off of a metonic cycle. And that's just basically a cycle named after a guy named, he's like a Greek guy who noticed that there's a 19-year cycle, Meton of Athens. And what he did was he noticed that there's 235 lunar months that make up this 19-year cycle, 19 solar years. And so that's when the moon and the sun will actually align. And there's like a few years in between that, I think like 13 years or something. that the moon and the sun line up to, but the 19-year cycle is mathematically harmonious with nature. And so you'll only get like a fluctuation of maybe like a day or so, but this calendar of 19-year moon cycle calendar is what a lot of ancients used to track time. They use this, and they also use the solar eclipses as a calendar. And that's called the Saros cycle, the solar eclipse cycle. And that's more around like 18 years and change. So that's very exact as well. So the Saros cycle and the Metonic cycle is usually what was used. And these are words that we're getting from the Western world. The Eastern world of India and China and those areas, they actually knew about this thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. Because we're the winners of wars, the West has won a lot of the wars, we've changed the history to meet our language. And so we've also changed the dates of when things were discovered. But the Metonic cycle was actually discovered over 10,000 years ago. So in India, they actually have it historically documented to around, I think it's like 15 or 16,000 years ago that these cycles were actually identified. And it could go back further than that. And that's something that I've noticed when reading these Western astronomic books and astrology books. A lot of history is taught that history starts around 4,000 BC or almost around 6,000 years ago.
Close to the Hebrew calendar.
Yeah, the Hebrew calendar kind of shows that too. And the Hebrew calendar goes off of a mathematics of 6,000 years. So it's a very mathematical calendar. And they say that at the end of 6,000 years is like great destruction. And the reason why they say that is because they can't calculate the orbits of the moon and the sun and the stars further than 6,000 years. That's how their 60-based mathematics works, is it goes out to 6,000 years and then they have to recalibrate it again. And so that's why they created this mythology of great destruction, because you have to destroy the calendar of mathematics and create a new one for the next 6,000 years. So it's a very mathematical system in the Hebrew calendar. But these systems were created to keep us in alignment with the seasons. And we need to go back to noticing what star is really prominent during a certain sprouting of plants that we're growing, or when the rains happen, there's certain star constellations up in the sky. We need to notice those things. And then that brings us back into alignment with the stellar. Yeah, the truth of the stellar and also the seasonal changing. And that's what combines sidereal and the tropical astrology stuff, is knowing that they're actually two pieces to one whole. And so if we bridge those two things together, we can find that there is a unity to all that. But there's a lot of confusion that has been created, whether like one's right and one's wrong. They're both useful. And I think that just by focusing on more of the scientific aspect of nature, you're going to find the unity of those two things. And that's what I like to bring into play with my calendar, the World Astronomic Planner. And then also the new one that I have is the Spring Equinox Planner. Now, it doesn't have all the different calendars from around the world in that new one. It has just basically the bare basics, really clear to the point, the lunar changes, the solar changes. And it also has the start of the moon year and start of the solar year and the start of the age. And the age is basically what we determine at the spring equinox.
Do you have a point of view of what age we're currently in?
Yeah. So in the planner that you have, I was using calculations by eye, by my sight. And I actually went into the astronomic calculations of the astronomical age and I retuned it. So the new update to the planner is going to have the retuned age when it starts.
What's the rules that you're using to set it?
So what I'm doing is I'm looking at where the sun is at the spring equinox when it's due east. and I'm looking at the constellation that is behind the sun as right before the sun rises and as the sun rises.
How much before the sun rises?
It doesn't really matter that much because the sun is going to be in a stellar sign for up to a month sometimes. It just depends on the sign because Virgo is going to be really big and then Libra is really small. So it's around like half a month to a month and a half or 2 months. That's how long the sun stays in a sign. So right now we're in the sign of Pisces coming up for the spring equinox. And let me look in the planner right now.
So I'm guessing you're going to state based on firsthand observation that we are in Pisces, the sun is in Pisces, but nearing Aquarius. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's the observation you made.
Yeah. So it's completely astronomic. If we're going to go with astrology, a lot of people will say like, oh, well, it's based off of the houses and the house that we would be moving into is the house that is associated with Aquarius. But the thing with houses is they don't change. The first house is the house of the sunrise. The second house is 30 degrees after that. So if you look at the horizon, you're going to see basically 180 degrees, more or less. And you split those 180 degrees up into 30 degrees each. And that will be the first, that'll be six houses. And then the houses that we don't see that complete a circle would be the other six houses. So houses don't change. They don't fluctuate. So we can't really go off of houses changing and the age of Aquarius is happening based off of the house system because houses are what they are. They don't change. They're actually based off of the movement of seasons as well.
So there's no precession in houses?
There's a precession in the constellations.
Right. So just so people know, and you can correct my numbers because clearly you've been doing the calculation. I think it's 71 or 72 years. We slip backwards counterclockwise, typically the way the zodiac circle is laid out, 1 degree. And that is what's called precession. And that is what allows for the sun to eventually be in a different sign or, as it's sometimes called, a new age or a new era. Would you make any correction to that statement?
That's pretty good. That's good. That's based off of tracking the year, tracking the movement of the year, and then seeing after a certain amount of thousands of years where the sun lines up at the spring equinox. And if it's different, that means that there's some type of big change that's happened in the sky. And so what has been noticed basically when the Christian calendar started is about 100 years before that, there was a philosopher that noticed, oh, you know, there's a big change in the sky. The sun doesn't line up with Aries anymore. It's lining up with Pisces. And then we went into the age of Pisces. And so now people are not using that direct observation of the sky. They're using books from ancient times and creating mathematical calculations. But if you actually use the observation, astronomic observations, you'll actually see that we're still in the age of Pisces. And I can pull it up. We're actually in the age of Pisces for...
Go ahead, for another how long, according to your estimation? 700 years?
No, actually, it's a little bit over 400. Okay. It's like 422 more years.
All right. So we need to qualify what you just said.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm assuming you're using a 30 degree division on the zodiacal signs when you make that calculation?
No, not at all.
You're using the actual accepted borders for the constellations? How are you marking a constellation? How do you know when you're 1 degree into the next constellation? What are the borders, the boundaries?
So I'm using the official astronomic boundaries.
Okay. And those are not, I thought those were 30 degree divisions.
Well, with this official astronomic boundaries, they're sectioning off the sky into a bunch of different.
Oh, rings. Okay. I know what you're talking about. So you're mentioning, it's just the same thing. Like if you looked at Virgo, it would be massive. And if you looked at Libra, it would be tiny, those divisions.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, what we're saying here is this is part of the problems that I've run into, but it's not a showstopper. But what it does do is really makes what age or so-called age, people are going to debate it. They just are, because people use different systems, which is why I go every time to the oldest I can get at least the oldest I can try to comprehend. For me, I like the yugas. I like the theory behind it. Doesn't make it the be-all and end-all, but everybody knows me. If it's old and it's antique, I'm interested in learning what I can learn. So basically what we're saying here is using the accepted astronomical union or whatever the hell it's called boundaries, we would be, according to Ian's calculation, in Pisces for about another 400 years, give or take. And that is slightly different than most of the Yuga calculations. But I want to wrap up the sun and moon thing so we can get through. There's so many more things I want to get into here. So if I was going to sum up the difference between a solar and a lunar calendar in a very non-specific general way, I would probably say a solar or sun-based calendar is very good at marking a year. It's also very good at marking holy days. But the moon is very good at months. And there could be 13 in a lot of lunar calendars. You'll see that there are 13. Sometimes it's an intercalary month that gets added. And I would further state that the word month is probably derived from month back in the day. But as we push forward, how do we determine a new year? And I guess that's kind of a loaded question. Maybe I should say, how have cultures chosen to determine the new year? And here's another big thing. When a power in the world comes in and says, guess what, ladles and jelly spoons, January 1 is the new year, what you have done is undermined every culture that had something different, which they put there for a good reason, based on their last frost, based on the amount of daylight, based on a solstice, based on whatever was important to that culture being marked by their calendar. So let's talk about it. How do you determine a new year?
Yeah, okay. Well, kind of to unwrap how we have a new year now, it's based off of the Roman Republic and what they use as a political point to refresh their people in power, basically. And so January 1st is usually associated with the Roman political system.
The consul who reigned for a year, right? So basically their president, their king.
Yeah. And they were associated with the sun because the sun has this cyclical 365 or 366 day type of system. It's not one exact number of 365 or 366, because we kind of just make it line up with how much daylight we have in a day. But if we got rid of the whole idea of daylight and just integrated the day and the night, it would be fluctuating between this year starts during the day and this year starts during the night, because the moon is elliptical. It's not an exact mathematical truth that it starts on a whole number. It's like a decimal system.
Does the length fluctuate in your view? Is every year the exact same amount of seconds, or does it fluctuate?
It fluctuates. And the time in a day fluctuates as well. So there might be 24 hours in a day and night during a certain time of the year. And then there might be 23 hours and a couple of minutes during another time of the year. And so what we have done is we standardized everything. And we created standardization so we can kind of mathematicalize the world.
Do you attribute this to a differential speed of the sun? What do you attribute this to?
Well, you know, traditionally in India, thousands of years ago, what they did was they set up temples that measured the shadows of everything, and they measured it with that. And what they came to is this idea of the elliptical movement of everything. Everything's kind of like almost a circle, but it's a little bit different than a circle. It's called a elliptical motion, which is almost closer to like an egg shape, but it's very similar to a circle.
Except the speed would vary in ellipse, right? So in a right. circle, the speed might be constant, whereas in ellipse, the speed would likely change, I think.
Right. And the reason why in India, in ancient India, thousands of years ago, they described it that the forces of the planets and the sun and the earth would interact with each other and propel or slow down the different planetary bodies. And that's what creates the movement of planets at a faster rate or a slower rate throughout the year, or throughout multiple years, depending on the planets.
Which would also include retrograde motions from our point of view.
Yeah, our point of view, retrograde happens, but in the bigger scheme of things, there is no retrograde. It's basically our perspective. But usually in ancient astrology, which was also astronomy, they saw retrograde as a very powerful time. Retrograde usually means that a planet is very close to us. And so when something is a lot closer to us, there is more power, more energy.
I didn't know that. I did not know that. So you're saying, so everybody knows, if you could, supposedly using the model that people use in the modern day where everything's in an orbit of some kind, that's how they illustrate it. Whether you like it or you don't, it works to mark where a thing is. My point is, where we are sitting here on Earth, Mercury is a good example because it's a quick mover. Sometimes it appears that the planet's going backwards, but the planet's not actually going backwards. It just looks like it is from where we are looking at it. Having said that, I had no idea that when retrograde motion occurs, and now that I'm thinking about it, I guess it's completely logical that it has to be closer to us. And the reason this is fascinating, and the reason I know what you said is true, that that motion was considered very powerful, is the ancient astronomical symbol for retrograde motion is RX, which currently the drug companies use to say, hey, we've got drugs for sale. So they took something that means basically to go backwards. And if I was going to give retrograde a better definition, and you can correct me if you look this up right now and think I blew it, but maybe a better way to say retrograde is it's one thing going in a different motion than all the other things around it, or most of the other things around it. My point being is, if the drug company is using that symbol to sell a thing we know is doing us harm, clearly they feel that symbol is powerful too. But I'm glad you said that. I had never considered that retrograde meant a thing was closer to us.
Yeah, it's actually usually a very good time. But in astrology, it's used as basically something that will come later in life. So if you have a bigger planet like Jupiter or Saturn retrograde in a chart, that means that it's going to develop later on in a person's life. If it's a planet that moves faster, like Venus or Mars or Mercury, it's not going to be as far in the future. But it means that it takes a little bit more time for people to process a certain thing. So retrograde can have a meaning in astrology, in where it comes later, but also it can have a astronomic meaning as well, where it has more grandness, more potency. So this is something that can be equated with measuring, with like the amount of noise it makes or sound. If you translate all of astrology and astronomy to music, then it kind of gives you another perspective. And so the sound of the music that the planets are making are louder when they're retrograde. And that will actually be very good. When Mercury is retrograde, for me, I personally see it as a more inner momentum, moving inwards, more meditative, more prayer-like. A lot of people in society say bad things happen, miscommunication, all of that, but it's actually more potent things. And so a lot of people might not be able to digest a larger momentum of energy coming at them. And so that may seem like mistranslation, or may seem like things kind of overriding circuits because it's too much energy. But ultimately, it's where it's more potent, and usually people are going more inwards. And so it's a really good time for prayer and meditation, a lot of spiritual oriented things.
Let me jump in here, Ian. We're coming up on the top of the hour, so I'd like you to quickly tell folks where they can find you, your work, and your book again. offer any information you'd like, and this will be available to membership in the top comment. Actually, there's going to be two in the top. Well, no, that's not true. Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, so you can find my links for my books on my website, www.onmaherbs.com, and they are linked to Amazon. So basically, I have all my stuff on Amazon. You can search my name on Amazon and find my books as well. And then also, I do have a few other things on my website because I am a trained herbalist. So I have everything in terms of health and herbalism type of stuff. And you can also find me on Instagram at onmaherbs as well. But the best would be the website.
You know, Jason, we should talk with Ian about maybe putting together an episode on herbalism.
Sure.
But as I wrap up here in hour two, we've got a lot more to cover. We barely dented the possibilities for this conversation. We might cover things like what are the most ancient calendars, who changed the history of calendars, how do you use the moon to garden, how many days are in a month or in a year, how many months are in a year, how many years are in a zodiacal age? All these kinds of things, and there's so much more. If we have time, we'll be getting into them. That brings hour one of episode 574 to a close. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in. Members get access to all the forums. They can create forums. They get access to all the comment sections, and they can view Shoot the Moon anytime they wish. That's a two-hour film covering all my telescopic work, which I will be adding, hopefully, a lot more video to the member side of the website now that I have my massive solar telescope. I'm going to try to prove some things. And in my view, the sun is the biggest deal there is right now in this part of the cosmic cycle we find ourselves. With that, I hope to see everybody logged in and joining us for hour two. And I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. And we'll see you shortly for hour two. There it is, man. Cheers. We'll be right back.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.